Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is July 14th, 1978, and this is tape number 337, side 2. I have a little trouble ending the tapes because of the time gauge here at the house. As I said before, I don't have the clock in front of me from the studio, KLRB. So if I use music at the end, then you'll know that I have signed off and I have a few seconds left on the tape. We'll just use some music, and that means I did mean to finish. Now we shall continue with the obituaries of just this last week of one particular day that I cut out the articles and see how much is happening in the world around us of people who've had longevity, because my interest, of course, is to follow all of these people. I do read the pages of the Washington Post and New York Times carefully, because there's good biographies of people that we have no idea what they're doing when they're alive, but when they're dead, you can put a lot of pieces together. There's one gentleman who died this week. He is 81 years old, not quite what Hitler would be, 7 years less, by the name of Ernest Breech. He was an aviation automotive official. He was one of the top executives of the country. He worked with Bendix Corporation, with TWA, and Ford Motor Company, and he, in quotes, helped rebuild Ford Motor Company after World War II. This is important because the rebuilding, the continuous importation of the Nazis in this country and the role that the Ford Motor Company had in putting Adolf Hitler in power demands that we examine some of these particular people. Mr. Breech worked for Ford, and they said that when he worked for them, that there was a time where they had losses of $100 million a year. And at that time, then, Mr. Breech stepped down as chairman in 1960, leaving Henry Ford II at the helm. And at that time, the profits had gone to $500 million a year. I wonder if these estimates of losses of $100 million a year were going to any neo-Nazi movements, that they were losses on the board and not actual losses that they were in the hole for, because it seemed that Mr. Breech went on to have a very successful career with Bendix Corporation. He revitalized the Ford Motor Company after the war, and then he became president and chairman of the North American Aviation Company, which was a General Motors affiliate, in 1933. You see, this is important because in 1933 is the year that Hitler just surfaced up front as the Führer. Mr. Breech resigned as vice president of General Motors in 1942 to work for Bendix Aviation Corporation Company. And, of course, the Secretary of our Treasury, Mr. Blumenthal, came from the Bendix Corporation. In 1955, becoming the first chairman of Ford's board, the first chairman of Ford Motor Company's board, Mr. Breech described the Ford Company in 1946 as being an awkward, misshapen giant suffering from hardening of the arteries. What they were suffering from in 1946 was the loss of World War II, putting all their money into Hitler, and they had to rebuild Germany and their weapon system over again, a clandestine manner, I suppose, getting ready for the World War III that we see now. And, of course, then Mr. Breech worked in 1955 as an eight-man panel, member of an eight-man panel, studying the, in quotes, peaceful uses of atomic energy. In 1953, he won the annual Brotherhood Award from the National Conference of Christian and Jews, given a Freedom Foundation Award, which is interesting considering his working with Mr. Ford all these years. Again, the Los Angeles Times had two or three sentences about Mr. Breech being brought in to rebuild the Ford Motor Company after World War II. And the Washington Post had just three or four sentences saying that he worked for Bendix Aviation and that the Ford Company was losing $68 million a year, and he came in. And in the reconstruction period, they did very well. This man's links to the Bendix and to the atomic energy and Ford Motor Company is interesting. He passed away. Another man who passed away this week at age 84, that would be four less than Adolf Hitler, is Otto Timm, described as a pioneer of U.S. aviation. He was 84. Otto Timm was one of the pioneers of aviation and the man who gave Charles A. Lindbergh his first airplane ride. He just died this week. Charles Lindbergh, of course, was ready to move into Germany when Germany invaded Poland and was a Nazi. That doesn't have anything to do with Mr. Timm's political affiliations, but it's interesting that a man who gave the first airplane to Charles Lindbergh just died this week. His first plane was in Minnesota in 1909 that he built, and he came to California in 1916 and started training Army pilots in 1916. In 1922, he worked for an aircraft factory, and that's when he met Charles Lindbergh, the young pilot. He returned to California in 1925 and started building airplanes, and in World War II, he manufactured the Navy trainers and the troop transports. Another man, 87, died this week. He'd be a year younger than Adolf, Colonel G.H. Steele, a veteran of two wars, retired Army Colonel Gordon Steele. He was a veteran of World War I and of World War II in France. In the First War, he led the 2nd Infantry Division. The unit was decorated by the French government, and he was entitled to wear the braided rope on his uniform. He had decorations, the Silver Star, the Purple Heart, the Croix de Guerre. And in World War II, he served in the Army Air Force in England, France, and Belgium. Now, Hitler fought on the other side, the German side, in World War I, and then, of course, was behind World War II. Mr. Steele retired from the Army in 1946. He was a charter member of the Army Navy Club in Arlington, Virginia. He's 87. He died this week. Then there are other people not quite so famous, but fairly well known. America's former slave, Charlie Smith, just celebrated his 136th birthday this week. Mary McReynolds, the widow of former Tennessee congressman. Her husband, Samuel McReynolds, was chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. She was 90, and she died this week. Eleanor Arnold, a widow of the decorated Air Force General Henry Hap Arnold, died in Sonoma. She was active in organizations. Her husband had retired after World War II. He was a major and then worked his way up and was a high officer in the United States Army, the Air Force General, Hap Arnold, 91. She died. Marvin Shirley died, 84 years old, a labor official in Philadelphia, died at Georgetown University Hospital. That would be 4 years younger than Adolf. Mr. Shirley had gone to Uruguay and lived with their family who were in the Foreign Service, was active in Washington, D.C., worked with the Labor Department in the mid-40s, and was assigned to the refugee program in Greece and Athens in the early 1950s. He also worked in 1958 in the Philadelphia office as a director for the AID. He worked for an assignment for the AID, which has been a CIA front in Uruguay, designing model labor relations for that country. He was 84, 4 years minus Adolf. These people have quite active lives, going right back to Hitler's childhood or paralleling it, and they're just dying at this time. Louise Fry died, 86 years old, a Treasury Department employee, chief of the Loans and Currency Division before retiring in 1962, a native of Washington and one of the members of the Daughters of the American Revolution at age 86. Nan Tolson died, 88 years old, born the same day as Adolf Hitler. This was in the Washington Post, active in thrift shops and organizations in Washington, D.C. Dr. D.T. Walton, a dentistry student at Howard University, 86 years old. He served in the Army in World War I. He was a charter member and president of the Georgia Dental Society. He died. He was just 2 years younger than what Adolf would be. Also, there was a picture in the San Francisco Chronicle of a concert this week where James Edward Miller, nicknamed Sing, was playing jazz. A picture of him July 10th, very active in San Francisco area at the Stern Grove. So 88 is quite an age to be active for some people. Harriet Davies died, age 99, described as a social worker. She died this week, and she wrote a book on sailing ships. And I was interested in her age because she's 10 years older than, died 10 years older than Adolf. But then it went on to say that she died in Austin, Texas, and that her son-in-law is Walt Whitman Rostow, special advisor to President Johnson on Foreign Affairs. She married Milton Davies, who established the Academy of Arts and Sciences at Columbia University in New York. Her daughter married Walt Rostow in 1947, and she made her home with them and went with them to Geneva in Switzerland in Cambridge, England, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Rostow was a professor at MIT, then to Washington for 8 years and lived with them while he was advisor to President Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson. And Walter Rostow is now a professor at the University of Texas, and that's where she lived. Another man was described in the news this last week who didn't pass away. He's Dr. Richard Wolff. He's 90 years old. He's a multimillionaire. He has a Wolff Fund and Foundation. He recently gave a prize to Dr. Carl DeJarsi, DJERASSI, professor of chemistry at Stanford University. Of course, I don't know the origin of Dr. Carl DeJarsi or why this particular university professor was given money, but Richard Wolff was funding him. He lives in Tel Aviv and is a multimillionaire at 90 years old, a year older than Adolf, if Adolf's alive. Another man passed away this week, 99 years old, Russell Peitzer, a philanthropist, a rancher, chairman of the First National Bank in Pomona, one of the charter members, a citrus rancher down in the Pomona area, active in that area. And Oswald David Reich was only 85 years old, 3 years younger than what Hitler would be, executive vice president of Dexter Folder Company and of MGD Graphic Systems, a division of Rockwell International. He was the director of the First National Bank and Trust Company and the Rockland National Bank Company and the Empire National Bank up till his retirement in 1971. And he lived, he survived by members of his family in McLean, Virginia. Another person, age 82, just 6 years younger than what Adolf would be, an Annapolis economist by the name of Isidore Lubin, a special advisor to President Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman. He had a heart attack this week. He worked with the federal government in 1918 as a statistician in the Food Administration with the War Industries Board. So he would be associated with Herbert Hoover in the ripoff of the food plan where the money was sent to the Tsarist white Russians that wanted the swastika later in the Soviet Union. Herbert Hoover, under the guise of sending food over to Europe, was actually sending money to these Tsarists that had escaped. Mr. Lubin worked for the War Industries Board. He returned to the Federal Reserve in 1933, again that important year that Hitler took over. He worked for the Bureau of Labor Statistics until 1946, and he was part of the New Deal Brain Trust during World War II and worked on the armaments plant program for Franklin Roosevelt. So you see there's a lot of people quite active in their long lives, that just passed away this week. Now, mind you, these are just from this week's news that I'm sharing with you. There's Chase Gove, an ex-postal official who died this week. He's 95 from Deal, Maryland. Chase Gove was taught to shoot a rifle by Calamity Jane, and they listed Buffalo Bill as one of his friends. He was 95. He died at his home in Cody, Wyoming. He used to bring stagecoaches to carry the mail in the western area. He became the postmaster of railway and ocean mail. He organized the U.S. air mail services. He left the Postal Service in 1933. Again, that's such an interesting year. 1933, there are important years in history that I study. One is the 1918 to 1919 period. After the revolution took place in Russia, the Versailles Treaty was inked. Then all the financiers had to retrench their activities. 1933 was the overt year of Adolf Hitler. 1957 is an important year in terms of our Congress changing its face. 1963 with John Kennedy's assassination, and also the year 1945 to 46 when the Nazis were distributed all over the world. It's probably just by coincidence that he worked in that postal service until 33, of course. Then there's a Dr. Kelso who died this week, 85 years old, a famous archaeologist credited discovering ancient sites of Bethel where, according to the Bible, Jacob saw his ladder. And a Mr. Morgan died this week, Robert Morgan, 88, an operating engineer who did the construction work. He helped construct the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. He died at Arlington Hospital. He was a native of Dearborn, Georgia. But even on in years, as an 88-year-old man, the Kennedy Center wasn't built that long ago. He was an operating engineer. And then in our local paper, Mabel Nelson, 92, passed away. She had worked with the Women's Relief Corps in Ames, Iowa. Alfred Studler was 87, a year younger than Adolf would be. Gershon Ephros, a cantor in New York City, who wrote a book, an anthology on sacred music, religious music, and so forth, passed away. And then there's a picture of a couple 100 years old, each of them celebrating their anniversary in New York City, and President Carter said his wishes. And for all we know, it might be Eva Braun and Adolf just 11 years from now celebrating their anniversary. We wouldn't know, but I think I've made the point that just these articles this week, in just one day's cutting the newspaper, made me just turn more conscious to the age of the people who were dying, because I don't think the fact that Adolf Hitler was born in 1889, in April 1889, means very much now, because a lot of people, age 88 up through 90 and going, pushing on even a little older, have led very active lives, and particularly if this man was a vegetarian down in Antarctica with a healthy diet and no germs, he would even have a better chance of surviving. Last week, I wasn't even looking for longevity as a part of my clipping newspapers. I just pointed out those ages to make a certain point in fact about Hitler. But I did notice just in one day last week there were some interesting people that had passed away that you may want to read more about, that were described in the Washington Post and the New York Times particularly. There's a man named George Fisk, age 62, retired from the Defense Intelligence Agency. He worked for the DIA, and he died just last week, in quotes, apparently from a stroke. He worked in the university's public affairs office before World War II. During the war, he was in U.S. Navy intelligence, primarily in China, then went to Berkeley campus after the war. He was called into Navy duty in the Korean conflict as an intelligence officer, was in the intelligence in the Air Force. He was transferred to the Defense Intelligence Agency when it was organized in 1962. Now, the Defense Intelligence Agency is the branch of the service to watch that even has more money and more secret than the CIA. He passed away this week. The diagnosis wasn't sure, as I say, apparently a stroke at age 62. Harry B. Wolf, age 62, the same day, died a National Security Agency agent. He was worked for as an analyst for the National Security Agency, and he died of a heart attack the same day. He had a real estate office. He had joined the National Security Agency as a management analyst, and he worked for them 18 years. He joined the Department of Army as a civilian training advisor in 1941. After World War II, he served as an administrative assistant in the war crimes trial in Nuremberg, Germany. He was in the military occupation before returning to Washington in 1951, worked for the State Department 2 years, and then the National Security Agency. I think the overlapping of the work of these men and a lot of the investigative journalism that could lead towards the things that these people would know is interesting to think about right now at this time. And the same day that Harry Wolf and George Fisk died, retired Armor Colonel John Lays died, and he's described, L-A-Y is his name, as working, he's 59 years old, who served in the Pacific during World War II. He had an electronic firm, and he died of a heart attack. He was born in Missouri, moved to San Diego, enlisted in the Army in 1940, got an officer's commission in 1943. He went to Washington in 59 in the office of the Adjutant General. From 1961 until his retirement in the Army in 65, he was an aide to the Secretary of the Army. 61 to 65, of course, with the planning of the Kennedy assassination. I'm not implying that he had anything to do with it, but I have said that the plans to kill John Kennedy were set in 1960, and of course there was a lot of cover-up, and the head of the Pentagon, the historian Otto Winokur, was from the Pentagon. The minutes of the Warren Commission meetings illustrate that they sent in the Army to write the Warren Report. After he left in 1965, working for the Secretary of the Army, he headed an electronic firm in the Washington, D.C. area. another man who passed away the same day, Leo Klein, C-U-L-L-I-A-I-N-A-N-E, Leo Patrick Klein, 71 years old, a former White House correspondent, a Washington public relations man, died of a coronary thrombosis. He joined the staff of the New York Herald Tribune. He covered the White House during the New Deal days. He served in the South Pacific in World War II. He wrote sketches of the top military men, including Douglas MacArthur, Admiral Chester Nimitz, and William Halsey. After the war, he went to Washington. He worked for the Tribune in the 50s, and then he worked for such members of Congress as Senator Estes Kefauver and Senator Wright Patman. In the mid-50s, he worked for public relations firms in Washington, D.C. He collaborated with various persons, authors on books on Mr. Roosevelt and Truman and one called The Volcanic Isle. It'd be interesting to know how much history he took with him in the grave. Another reporter who died the same day or a day apart was Felix Belaire Jr., 70 years old, a year younger than Mr. Cullinane. He worked in the Washington Bureau of the New York Times, described the obituary in the New York Times. Felix Belaire Jr., a former White House correspondent for the New York Times, died of a heart attack. He was 70 years old. He went through his senior year at Georgetown University. He went to Georgetown and worked and covered the news for seven presidents and every national political convention from 1936 until 1964. That is the Hitler era after the 36 until the year after John Kennedy was killed. He covered the White House beat. He was a reporter during World War II. After World War II, he returned and worked for Time Life Incorporated. And from 53 to 55, he was news editor of the Washington Bureau. He served 3 years in Stockholm as a Scandinavian correspondent, and then came back and covered the White House. That's Felix Belaire Jr., 70 years old, who died of a heart attack. The Washington Post also describes some of his work of covering the presidential campaigns from 36 to 1964. The 24th was a bad day for authors and writers. In 1978, another reporter died, Cecil Holland, ex-Hill aide, reporter for the Star. Cecil Holland wrote major stories for nearly 30 years for the Washington Star. He died just about the same time that Time magazine is taking over the Washington Star. He left the Star in 1967, however, and was an administrative assistant to Senator Robert Griffin of Michigan, who had retired then in 1975. From 1940 to 1967, Mr. Holland covered all the presidential campaigns. That's the second newspaper reporter covering those campaigns, and he covered them through 67, and his co-worker here covered them through 65. This is through the Kennedy era, the Lyndon Johnson era. He came in and from 1940 through 67 covered these campaigns. He was born in Tennessee. He had been with the Air Force in Europe in World War II. He was the author of a book about the Civil War, Morgan and its Raiders, published in 1942. I think it's quite a coincidence that these men died the same day and carried the same beat, and one working for the Times and one for the Star. There was another death the same day, obituary page, all in the same day, on the same page. A retired Army Colonel James Nicholas, 56, died of a heart attack. He had served a veteran of three wars. Colonel Nicholson was a native of Baltimore. He served France during World War II. He was in the National Guard in the Army in 1942. He got the Silver Star and Bronze Star. He served in the Korean conflict and got the Oak Leaf Cluster. And in 1966, he was ordered to Vietnam. He worked for the Office of Emergency Preparedness until his second retirement in 1973. He was a member of the Army-Navy Country Club. I don't know what to make of all this reading it on one day. I don't really have any firm conclusions except that these men that passed away last week when I cut out these articles and just this week when on one particular day carried a lot of history with them. We'll chalk it all up to coincidence, but it is an unusual coincidence that these deaths have all bunched together, or maybe I'm just not reading the paper carefully enough, but I don't remember any 2 weeks where so many people whose jobs overlapped or worked with each other or had information about things that are breaking in the news all expired at the same time. Another important death was a man 6 years younger than what Adolf would be, Luther Jungdahl, a U.S. judge, a federal U.S. judge. He was formerly from Minnesota, and he was famous during the McCarthy era. He died of, I suppose, a lingering illness. This wasn't a stroke or a heart attack. He was 82 years old. He was appointed by President Truman, and he was a very courageous judge at the time of the McCarthy hearings. He refused to be taken in by the hysteria at the time of the Cold War, and he was very fair on the bench, and he was proud of his rulings in the particular case of Mr. Latimer, that they were trying to do make him a top Soviet espionage agent, Senator McCarthy. And this judge, Luther Jungdahl, was very fair about this and stuck to his guts and refused to go along with the Red Scare. Another thing to watch in the news are national deaths and changes of governments. If you have a manila folder system or go to the grocery store or stationery store and buy some folders, put in current deaths and changes of government, coup d'etat, because a lot of things are happening right now, and it's the sum total of what is happening, not individually, that you always have to look for. A lieutenant governor of Delhi, India, during Indira Gandhi's government, died just July the 11th. He was supposed to have jumped down a well, in quotes, an apparent suicide. I think there may be some charges against Mrs. Gandhi that they're cooking up, I've read recently, and possibly he was a witness in this particular case. He was faced with possible prosecution for abuse of power during her regime. He fell down a well. There are many governments being toppled right now and many heads of states being murdered. Maybe we'll go into a few of those next week, and then I want to talk about Evel Younger. But read your newspaper and save the articles on the coup d'etat that are taking place, because what happens there affects our lives later, and you should be able to follow some of these countries, even though we're not familiar with the intricacies of the government. The heads of governments are being murdered. It looks like the tape is running out now. I'm sorry. We have to sign off. I wish it were a little bit longer, but I'll be back with you next week, and maybe a more pleasant subject than a roving obituary, but we'll see.